everybody. Welcome back to the Mormon History Hoedown. My name is Kara Burrell. Sometimes I go by Nuance Ho, and sometimes I make podcasts about all different kinds of things, from Mormon history, deconstruction. If you are sitting here and you thought to yourself, bring on Britt Hartley already, Kara. Stop talking about all of the things that your podcast does. I want to know the meaning of life. I don't have a second to spare. Fine, I will get right into it. Welcome to the podcast. My queen, my hero, the love of my life, Britt Hartley.
Good to be back so soon. I loved our podcast conversation. I was on a high for like a couple days because we just had such a good jam sesh.
And why?
It was so
what?
Good.
Tell people what was unique about it. That's where I kind of want to start, because people are coming over from the Mormon stories a little bit right now from your interview about the amazing book you have coming out. But I too am like, there is something special about that podcast.
I don't mean to like kick out men, because I know sometimes in these like feminist ex-Mormon spaces, we have some things to say about men, and this isn't meant to be like man-hating, but there's something about talking with women that just gets down to the experience of life, rather than sometimes with podcasters that I do that are male podcasters, we just want to talk about isms, like what is stoicism and how does it relate to existentialism? And like, I can play that game and that's fine. But like me and you were crying because it was real and it was our lives and it was our kids and it was how we felt. And you just like, just women pull out. And especially our conversation where you've been in some of these places that I've cried in too, It just pulls out the human side of it that I just think women do so well. And I just loved our conversation because it was, you know, all the philosophical things, but it was couched in our actual real lives, like our actual families, like our marriages being on the verge of divorce and our kids, like how, what do I teach them? And that just, it just feels more at the end of the podcast, instead of saying like, oh, I was really good with my podcast or my concepts, or I should have explained this better. I got off thinking she's been where I've been, and we jammed and we connected and we're best friends forever. And I don't have that feeling, especially with, you know, some of the other podcasts that I do that tend to just be purely intellectual or debates about who's right, Christians or atheists and all of that. But it was just a different vibe and I loved it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for saying that. And I agree. And I spoke at Natasha Helfer's retreat last weekend at this like sex therapy retreat. And one of the main things that I really wanted to speak on, if I had an hour of, you know, a bunch of ex-Mormon women's time, was a lot of the things that you spoke about at Thrive that we talked about, was the sense of like, you know, destigmatizing and taking back this autonomy and this power of words around spirituality, call it whatever you want, even if you need to, you know, change around the meanings and the words, but something that causes you to have a resonance within yourself that you might've been missing since Mormonism and that has been so outsourced for so long, and what it feels like to gain that back from learning a lot of the history of religion that you talk about so eloquently, but then also just what that kind of does naturally to your power as you just kind of move through the world and you ask yourself, like you've been saying, what do you want to experience? And when I'm speaking to a bunch of ex-Mormon women, like if we're talking about what we want to experience as a holistic person and sexuality is a main part of it, I'm like, you got to kind of put these layers back of like, where did you forget that you had this power? Where did the time go where you didn't look into the aspects of your sexuality or all these different aspects of life that are still very, you know, core to who we are as women that we just have lost in this deconstruction process? And the reconstruction that you're so good at talking about is like all part of it, you know, developing healthy sexuality, self parenting, a million different aspects of our real actual life. And it's so cool. Just so honored that we get to have more conversations like this. Mm-hmm. It just is life changing. So tell me about your book. But yeah.
Yes.
I just want to make sure that gets in.
I'm going to send it to you. I just ordered some author copies. So one is coming to you. That I'm sending. But this is the book. It's No Nonsense Spirituality, All the Tools No Faith Required. And I didn't, something that I haven't talked about, so this is exclusive Nuance Ho content, is why I chose this cover for the book. So spirituality often has the image of an eye, because there's something about spirituality that points to seeing, that instead of just being neurotic and depressed and self-obsessed and worrying about things that we know don't don't matter. There's always been in our spirituality, art and images and symbolism, the concept of an eye, that it's this place where you can see things better. You can see how interconnected we are. You can see how precious life is. You can see, you can see people more clearly and more compassionately. And there's this image of sight. And so I added this eye to the cover, but I didn't want it to be like frou-frou rainbow, like read this book and you'll know and see everything about everything. And so this is why this artist, because what would it mean to see and be spiritual and live an intentional life with eyes wide open to your own death and all of the things in the face of harsh truths, in the face of a mess, in the face of not knowing what the hell is going on with ultimate reality, in the face of the fact that you're going to die, in the face of really, really hard things? How do we actually still make a life that is worth experiencing without shying away from the chaos, from the hard things, but actually looking those things in the eye too? So that is kind of my symbolism story behind why I chose that cover. Not that yet. So that is exclusive content there.
Exclusive content for an exclusive book that shouldn't be an exclusive practice, spirituality tagline. There you go. The link is down in my description right now, and I am a one-woman show, and I don't have a bunch of producers like Mormon Stories does to drop it into the live chat right now, but anyone wants to do that, they can, for the live audience. So thank you guys for joining us. If you just came over for Mormon Stories, we're going to cover a few similar things, but I have my own relationship with Britt, my own ideas and things that I want to expand on, in addition to those things that she talked with Margie and John for a couple hours over there, and in addition to what we talked about last time. So right off the bat, for my audience, as broad as possible, you know, people who are interested in the deconstruction and reconstruction, one thing I don't hear people talk about enough, that if you are, you know, helping these people in these spaces, will you please like define what you mean by just deconstruction generally? If somebody is just, that's like the water we swim in and the air we breathe, but to an outside audience who doesn't understand why this process is important and how it's unique to like our post, you know, leaving a religion, it's not as simple, like you say, it's just drinking coffee sometimes and piecing out. What is deconstruction for people who don't understand it? And what is the importance of actually having something to reconstruct?
Yeah, that's a big question. So when we talk about deconstruction, we talk about how you are too ordered and it's actually limiting you in some way. And so we tend as human beings to do best when we are centered in between order and chaos. With too much order, we feel suffocated. There's just not enough authenticity. We're trying to fit into a box. We are too stifled by our bias and we're just not thriving out there. Too much chaos is the opposite problem. There's too many choices. There's too much freedom. I don't have enough order and structure, and that is paralyzing. And so there are dangers to both sides. And so what I really try to do is talk about spirituality in a way that if you are too ordered, then you have tools for deconstruction, because how we get kind of to this good middle space where you have some order and structure, but you're able to grow. And if you are too ordered, the process by which you kind of get more centered and are able to enjoy more of life and have a better human experience and not get too far deep into a cult and all these things is going to be the process of deconstruction. And when we talk about that, it's really about challenging your own thoughts and your own beliefs. And that is really hard to do because we have cognitive biases that really allow us to not see reality as it is, but see reality according to our beliefs. And so it's very difficult for brains to do. It's very difficult for anyone to do. And deconstruction is bigger than just Mormonism. It's bigger than just religion. This really started with the postmodernist movement, where we were starting to look, it started really with literature, because we thought that these words actually reflected reality. And then when we actually dug into literature and language, we realized that language doesn't actually reflect reality. They kind of create reality. And so we started to deconstruct language. And then that just bled over into this kind of postmodernist movement, where we realized that things that we thought were reality are just our perceptions of reality. And then that bled, you know, that also bled over into religion. So we've been you know, when historians write about this time, we're in the post-postmodernist phase, which is we've deconstructed a lot about what we think is real. We've recognized that we have cognitive biases. We've recognized that we don't accurately see reality. We recognize that there's all these things going on in our brain subconsciously, and we only can attend to a small portion of that. And how do we actually deal with that is kind of the period of human history that we're in now. We're in post-postmodernism. So deconstruction is much bigger than Mormonism, and it's just really recognizing that what we believe and what we want to believe and what we want to be true and systems and ideas that we thought were solid are not as solid as we thought they were when we look closer. And sometimes that can just be a really healthy thing. You can do, you know, some people are reconstructing while they're deconstructing and tend to do it without a lot of existential angst. For some people, when that belief kind of foundation drops, everything drops with it. And it can be really disorienting for your brain and can lead to really hard places that you and I have both been to. But there's a way to kind of center in that so that you can build up your own kind of order and structure and way to approach life and get all the tools that come from religion and spirituality, but also have room to grow and accept that there's most things about reality we just don't know. And so when we can find a balanced place there, it tends to be very healthy for us. So I try to help people to do that so that they can do it in a less painful way than the 20-year journey that I did that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I want to ask you about, you know, real life ways and like the tools specifically. I want to kind of jump right into that for somebody in their day-to-day life where, you know, I'm thinking back to my Mormon traditional conservative self. And when I'm anxious, I say a prayer or, just a lot of the monsters of the void that we were talking about last time are kind of hidden away by all of these other, you know, thought-stopping cliches where I don't need to think about that. And that keeps the monster in the void. And that gives me this nice little tool, this little spiritual practice of I pray to this thing without, you know, now in the deconstruction process, that really not being there. So what tools do you think from various spiritual religious backgrounds as an atheist spiritual director, like in your day-to-day life, do you wish that you would have had long time ago, if somebody could have just said, have you thought about like, here, deconstruct with this? Because in religion, they kind of do give you the this that you kind of have to figure out for yourself. So what are some of the things that you would recommend or that you use for yourself?
That's a really good question. I think if I were to go back, the place that tends to be the best starting place for people when like you feel like you don't have anything, like you just lost everything because everything was tied to religion, is to start with a ritual. We have the strongest science there that rituals help you to mark your values, increase pleasure, decrease pain, and also process emotions out of your body. And so I wish I would have kind of dug into the science of rituals sooner and been kind of, when you dig into the science of it, you can feel more safe to go into this thing without feeling like you're being duped by a new religion. Mm-hmm. And if I would have had more rituals to kind of help me process rather than feeling like I was just like stuck in a feeling, mm-hmm. I think that would have helped me more earlier on. So some common rituals that I do with people, often for women, we have a funeral for the woman who never got to be. Like the woman who decided to get married at 19 like me and have children. And you now you're in a life that you don't even remember choosing because you didn't really have a voice then. You didn't even probably know who you were then. And rather than just kind of sit with that for years and years, we have science that shows that creating a ritual for that is the best way to get into that emotion and have it process out of your body so that you can move on to the life that and the time that you still have. So maybe it's a ritual, maybe it's a funeral for the person who never got to be, maybe it's a funeral for a past self and you go into a body of water like a baptism and you reclaim that and say, I'm letting this go. This part of me is dying so that this part of me can come to life. Water and fire are great places to start with rituals because we've been doing that for long before Mormonism. We've been doing rituals with water and fire for least 100,000 years. So that's my guess. Maybe just tens of thousands of years, but a long time, far longer than Mormonism, far longer than Christianity. And also just around me now, I have lots of reminders of how I want to live my life. I have like necklaces and, you know, some of the things behind me in my she shed and a quote that I'll say in the morning and something that we say as a family on Sundays to make us feel like we're still uniting as a family, even though we don't say a prayer, and a holiday that is unique to us that we can look forward to. For me, it's for our family, it's May 4th. It's Star Wars Day. And we talk about good and evil and we make a big deal out of it. And it's great because I'm a nerd and I love it. And so I wish I would have dug into the ritual side of things sooner and kind of built that up, because I think that would have given me at least like some kind of floor to stand on while I'm rebuilding everything else. And it would have allowed me to process faster, and it would have allowed me to focus on kind of the values that I still want to have in my life or with my family without feeling like, oh my God, it's Christmas. What do I do? I'm not going to do anything. I think that would be where I would start, is the science of rituals, and have it start with you. What's your value? What's a quote or story that inspires you? And you said it at the very beginning, which is following resonances. That's the best place to start when you're stuck, because you don't have to make a decision for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. This story, you resonate more than another story. Let's start with that. Let's start with that. Mm-hmm. So following your resonances and creating rituals around them, I think if I would have started that sooner, it would have given me kind of a bottom to that deconstruction floor.
Mm-hmm. That is such good advice. And I will also just add a totally true thing that's also a joke for me. The funeral for the woman who never was, I hear those are called hoe phases. They're very popular with some. So pin in that maybe. But
you can express that in many, many ways.
Yeah. So speaking of rituals, I haven't told you about this yet. Really fun thing that we share is we both wear necklaces that remind us of certain aspects of our
nihilism. I'll show you mine if you show me yours.
C'est la vie. Now, listen, I was just listening to you explain yours for the first time here, but I know that there are, like you said, you know, certain things you keep around you that remind you of what those values are. And please tell my audience about your story about bees and the necklaces you wear around your necklace. And all I'll say is when I left the church, I was like, I want to have a necklace. I want to have some piece of jewelry that is unique to me, that isn't like a wedding ring. The only thing I can really commit to wearing is like this. And then the necklace, I got a circle because I saw a meme once. Have you seen, it's like the most beautiful, hilarious nihilist meme, and it's this little ugly face. And he goes like, it's called the circle of life because it's fucking pointless. And it just made me laugh so hard. And in that moment, I realized something that was that funny and disturbing and like sick and dark that made me laugh. Like I was dying of laughter. I was like, it's the experience of laughing, of going around and just looking at the circle going, it's going to go around. It's going to keep going around. Something else will come up. I will laugh. I will go around and around. And I was able to be pulled out of what I didn't even know was a nihilist phase. Now I know what it was now, but it was so dark.
Perfect.
And it was so, and it was funny because I actually mentioned that on my least favorite interview I've ever done with Bill and RFM the day that I left Mormon Stories, and I was not in a good place that day. And I told them about this necklace, and that has been the number one thing that the Mormon podcasting sphere, in my analysis, has taken and run with, that I just overall am an evil person that can't be trusted because she doesn't think there's like an intrinsic meaning to life. Sorry. Or that I was describing the darkness of nihilism. They're like, see, that's where it is. And I'm like, that's unfortunate that I'm one of the worst days of my life. I'm trying to explain to you what I live for, and you guys take that and run with it. But it still is a necklace I wear every day. And
I love it. Yeah. I did not have that response at all. I thought it was perfectly you, because it's profound and it's also funny. And having listened to you at Thrive, you are both those things. Like, you will go to dark, profound, philosophical places, and then you'll say the funniest dick joke, and both of those is you, and you weave it together in a way that only you can. And so having a necklace that reminds you of that is so perfect. And that's what I want people to do. Like, in Mormonism, our homes were surrounded by temples and CTR rings and symbols of Jesus, and we had it around us all the time. And I don't want to throw that away. Just make it you. What is your CTR ring? What is the thing, the quote, the movie, the story, the image that reminds you of what is it about life that is meaningful to you? So for me, I have a B here at the top, and that is, it was really helpful for me when I was doing some beekeeping and I was trying to figure out like this whole God thing and trying to make sense of it. And I felt, you know, I was still kind of in it. And the bees really taught me this profound lesson of interconnection, that one bee, you know, doesn't live very long. It's like a month and a half, contributes a quarter teaspoon of honey in its lifetime. If you put one bee on an island and said, like, what is the morality of a bee? It's like, in that scenario, it's totally meaningless. It's a totally meaningless question. There's nothing meaningful about that bee. But the hive in my, you know, on my property, it extends and affects the ecosystem for miles and miles. And we know now how much the bees, you know, affect everything. And that bee was a part of something that's so much bigger. And because of that, that bee, you know, bees dance. That's how they communicate to each other. And because that one bee that lived this short life and does almost nothing, but because it's connected to something bigger, it dances and it affects, you know, the world, and it changes the world, whether you have hives in that part of the world or not.
Totally.
And there was something profound in that message to me, that like, maybe, you know, maybe there isn't a God, but the thing that's bigger than me that I can connect to, that gives me morality and meaning and purpose and all the things, is the collection of all of us, the human story. And it shifted something in me, because when you think about meaning and purpose over a scan of like 100,000 years, like, what can I do today that's meaningful in 100,000 years? It's an absurd question. Nothing that you do is going to be meaningful today in that kind of time span. But if I sink it down to the connection, what could I do today that is meaningful just in the experience and connection and dance of it? Then a lot more things open up, and I can meet this God word in a new way, not as some Santa Claus in the sky, but as the connection of all of us that I'm a part of. And that, in a sense, became my higher power in a way that's like non, you know, woo or religious. And then the other one is this skull that says memento mori, and that just means remember you will die. And skulls are something that I have all around me all the time. And it used to be hard, and I used to mourn a lot of things, but now it's something that focuses my life on how I want to live. And so I have life. And so it's this symbol of life and death, and that in this moment, I have been born and one day I'm going to die. But in this moment, across time, you and me get to connect, and we get to talk, and we get to play, and we get to cry, and we get to laugh. And there's just something really beautiful about that, that reminds me of why life was worth living. And so I carry that with me in my necklaces and some of the symbolism around me. I also have a lot of winged hearts, like this guy up here. I also have a tattoo of a winged heart, which has always been the symbol of mysticism. It's when you stop doing and start being, just living from being itself. Mm-hmm. And the symbol of that in mysticism in a lot of traditions is a winged heart. And that was my first coming out of Mormonism, when I wanted something and I wanted to get a tattoo because it's an ex-Mormon ritual. And I did. I just have this one. But that was the thing that was meaningful to me. I'm going to start doing because it's important for the next life, and I'm going to start being and experiencing life as it is now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have two major questions for you. I love all of that. I love this kind of reclaiming of different symbols and what they mean to you, and living from a place of what you want to experience. One thing that I'm really obsessed with right now, if you remember back to my Thrive speech a little bit, is about the kind of this reconstruction process that is kind of a hidden world from people who are more in like the anger stages of just leaving the church or things like that, is a real reconstruction into all of the words around like individuation and then reintegration. And I just wanted to ask your thoughts on, I think it's really funny because as a comedian, my brain works in a way where I just want to see parallels. It's really hard for me not to be spiritual in a woo-woo-woo kind of way, because I love seeing parallels of things matching up. And that really helps for one being like repulsed by a lot of the things within a religion when you don't like them anymore. And then it also helps you reconnect with the things that you're like, I actually do like that thing from my religious upbringing or the ritual or what it brought. And so what I actually kind of heard you say when you were talking about your bee analogy thing was like, if Brigham Young could have seen you right now, and he'd be like, oh, she likes the beehive, huh? He'd be like, I remember a little thing called Deseret that I invented. And for me, that would be like a reintegration of like part of what I feel like I am as like a cultural Mormon that's, you know, that we are workers, we are caretakers, that like we build this state, like all of those like more slightly conservative, more like traditionalist Orthodox versions of Mormonism on this spectrum of like, I'm really proud of that and being able to reclaim something that I feel like, you know, my ancestors or my husband's, my parents are converts, but you know, that is part of the overall atmosphere of what I hope to share around with other people. Like those analogies should not be lost on Mormons, right? Like that's something that I think post-Mormons and everybody can kind of reintegrate if that's, you know, part of being a busy bee. Yeah. I don't know. Does that make sense?
And it's healthy. And I don't think anyone does it right away. Like, I don't think that someone jumps into it, right? Like you need to be angry and you need some separation and you need some time and you need some language and you need all of those things. Or else the reintegration is kind of like clingy and it's painful and
totally,
it's just not great. So you do like, need to, like, if you're in the angry phase, like, don't listen to this and think like, I need to be integrating. It's like, no, you don't. You need to be fucking angry right now. That's what you need to be right now.
Totally.
You can't skip that, right? But after you're fucking angry and that wildfire kind of runs its course, however long that it needs to run that course, then new life can grow. And a lot of that is reclaiming some of those things that are human, that Mormonism twisted in a way that was unhealthy, but there was something there that was beautiful or something there that was human. And so bees is a great example. I've seen ex-Mormons with bee tattoos because they've reclaimed that Deseret bee into something meaningful to them. I know Lisa Butterworth has a beautiful bee tattoo on her arm, and she'll have to share her story.
Like, I think that's really cool.
It's really cool because I think Lindsay Hanson Park has something with bees too, either in her house or on her body. I can't remember, but of reclaiming, like, this is a part of my story, but being a bee is different for me now. It doesn't mean like I'm making a casserole every day and delivering it to my neighbors. It just means I'm dancing or I'm alive or I'm connected in the same way that I felt about it. And so you can reclaim it, but also other things like Jesus, like take some time away from Jesus and just like be angry at everything. But then some people also return to Jesus and say, oh, there was actually some things here that were still really profound and still mm-hmm. really mystical and some stories and parables that still speak to me that I want to claim and take with me. And now I can more easily separate, oh, this is the God and all the dogma that we put on top of Jesus. But underneath that, there was kind of a Buddha character that is interesting. And right. Often what I see is people will jump to Buddha, right? Because Christianity is tainted. And then after spending some time in Buddhism, they kind of come back to Jesus and recognize, as you say, the parallels of like, oh, Jesus was doing that too. We just kind of fucked that up.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So reclaiming and also, is good, but go through the angry phase first.
Yeah. Can't recommend a good angry phase enough. I honestly think I've tried to be too nuanced and people are going to, I can never control what people have seen from me, but knowing myself and my content, what I put out, I honestly have needed to go through specific phases of being really angry at, you know, whatever you're kind of processing to really look it in the face and feel the feelings, you know, feel it to heal it kind of stuff, to be able to authentically be able to reclaim things that I was lacking and I would benefit from if I was able to, you know, contextualize them in a way that actually benefited me and just in the same ways, just without the dogma and without the woo and without, you know, any superstitions around it. So at this point in the conversation, obviously everyone in the live chat, again, hello, welcome, and please click the links below, stop what you're doing and go to Amazon to go pick up a copy of Brittany's book. I bought it before this interview started. I'm safe. I'm going to read the entire thing and turn into a non-bad version of a cult follower as I just read it. And it's just what I want to experience. It's what I will enjoy experiencing. I'll leave it at that. I won't turn it into a religion, I promise. But for you, Britt, for people who are, they read the title and it's like, no nonsense spirituality. What do you feel like people need to like kind of understand about how you're different or what you're trying to get across when you use the word spirituality? Like, what are you trying to say and what are you not trying to say for people who are like, I have been burned by all of that word. No, thank you.
Yeah. So where I think is, and I'm biased, of course, this is my own personal view by being in this,
that you're great,
studying in this space for a while. But my approach is that there's three currently really loud voices in camps when it comes to religion and spirituality. There's, you know, kind of fundamentalist religion, especially in the West. This is going to be Christianity, Islam, a little bit Judaism, but not as much. And those are going to be really loud voices about this is the only path, this is the only way. You know, even the most ardent Christian or Muslim will recognize that there has been trauma and problems in religion, and there are many problems in religion. And then there's this camp over here that says, yeah, don't do religion, but play these manifesting games with the universe and planets and crystals. And instead of the magic of Joseph Smith, we're going to go fully into the magic of New Age spirituality. And if you don't subscribe to that, or if you are skeptical of that, as I sometimes am on TikTok, at least some of the more pseudoscience aspects of that, or the spiritual bypassing aspects of that, there's kind of this attitude on TikTok that like, yeah, you can make fun of religion, like that's okay, but like, don't touch my crystals and don't touch
my astrology. You're not hurting anybody.
Yeah, we're not hurting anybody. And also like, it's racist. I get that one too. Like, oh, you're just so Western, and it's so racist to be critical of these things. And then you have the camp of atheism, and just saying like all religion and spirituality, like we need, like everybody needs to get over it. Like it's all bullshit. It's all trauma. It's all bad. And so those are really your three choices. Those are your three loudest choices. If you go onto social media and you say like, I want to have a more spiritual life, those are going to be the three voices that will be the loudest.
Can I just add something as somebody who's gone through this in myself, and I went into like hardcore atheist right there. I was nuanced in a way where I understood completely evolutionally, like why I wanted to have empathy for people. I didn't want to like say you're stupid for believing these things, but I definitely went hardcore into those things. And I'm at the point where I just am so interested, like we talk about being a truth seeker, that I feel like so much of this, like I'm trying to always give my audience helpful tools for reconstruction. Yeah, I'd love for you just to keep talking about those really are like the big three. And I've definitely been in the atheist one, and I don't want to, personally, I want to make sure my audience knows, I don't want to believe anything, you know, based on bad evidence whatsoever. So your guys are safe here for the rest of the conversation. Like, I just want to make sure people understand that we're in a place where we are trying to go from what is like actual, you know, best practices, like best tools, best things, without what you say, like the dogma, the believing the unbelievable, right? So like, just want to give everyone a warning. Like this is so cool of you to articulate how narrow it is in these views, but people need to be able to move and kind of freely experience the different spaces without the harm that could be caused
Right? Like we're trying to get the tools. So each of these three voices actually has real tools, like right. Religion actually has tools, rituals,
reintegration, and later on pin in that yeah. later
and wisdom traditions down. and scripture and story and community, like religion has some tools that are helpful for people, helpful enough that there are polls that say that, you know, if you are in religion, and for example during COVID, if you had a faith, that you tended to fare a little bit better. And some people will say, well, that means that religion is true. No, it doesn't mean that, because religion is just carrying things that are good for you. It's carrying a lot of tools that are good for you. And so the same thing with the New Age spirituality, or the New Age kind of occult world, is they are the best at supporting conversations between your conscious and subconscious mind, using symbols, using intuition, right. Body, female, nature, intuitive, introspective. You even something like tarot cards, you don't have to believe that the universe spun in such a way that you would only get that card that day to get the benefit of using symbols to tap into your subconscious mind to check in on yourself. So there are tools in that world too. And then in the atheism world, there's a shadow side, just like the other two worlds, there's a shadow side of just being an atheist, because you get to be a missionary for atheism and you get to be better than everyone and you get to be self-righteous in the same way that you were when you were religious, and you get to, you know, you're smarter than everybody. But there's also tools. There's tools in learning about your brain and neuroscience, right, and science and the scientific approach and the science of well-being. And atheism has the best tool in just taking shit off the table that doesn't deserve to be there. And so the approach that I take is, there's these three loud camps. There's tools that each camp has to offer, and also a shadow side to each approach. There's damage in religion. There are people that get like so into their intuitive space with crystals and woo that there is no check on intuition. And so their ego can just go awry. And I think we all know someone who's kind of gone down that rabbit hole and gotten a little bit lost, because there is a shadow side to not having community and not having checks and not having teachers and not having mentors and not having wisdom traditions, is because you can really believe whatever you want. And then you start spiritually bypassing and not knowing that you're doing it. And then in the atheist world, you know, they don't have a lot of tools. If you ask atheism, what do I do to raise my kids? And atheism itself just says, not God. That's all it has to offer the conversation. So each side has a shadow side, and each voice has tools. And so my approach with secular spirituality, with no-nonsense spirituality, is, what are these tools? How can we get it in a way that resonates with you? So I'm not going to tell you, like, this is the ritual that you're going to do. I'm going to say, here's the science that shows that rituals are good for you. Here's some options. Which one resonates with you? And then you can essentially build your own life and have tools for your own life without the shadow side of each side, without the trauma and whatever the damage is that each side does on its own. So by doing that all together, by being science driven, but still taking in the tools of the occult world of religions, you get the best of both worlds. You get the benefits of not getting trauma from religion or getting lost in crystal land, but you also get all the benefits of tools that sometimes atheism, you know, as a culture, can be kind of turned off because it, you know, comes from spirituality. So to me, that just tends to be the best bang for my buck. Like, I get the most benefits with the least amount of harm. I get the most benefits with the least requirements of faith, because I don't want to have faith anymore. I did that before and I got burned. I don't want to do that again. And so it's been an approach that helps me balance that, you know, get to that balance between order and chaos.
Oh man, I can't wait to ask you 50 more questions. Right on. Yes, it's an interesting Venn diagram. I think it's really kind of important to think about it in all of the terms that you just explained, and be continually curious in what actually resonates and causes the less amount of harm. Because we're sometimes accused of like trying to make a utopian system in our leftist brain ideals or whatever secular, post-religious, post-modern worldviews, you know. I personally don't know about you. We talked about on our last episode, you know, what we hope for the world. But I think the order of things is really just like, things are going to happen. We're human, but it's just less harm than at least, you know, the systems of the past. Can we just do a little bit better? But we're not expecting perfection, because I think that's where people have a stall gap, like in my mind. And what I think of is like, I don't want to commit to thinking about anything too much, because then I have to act like I know something, or I, you know, I'm on a very insecure footing from being raised in a cult. Like, I'm assuming I don't know anything. And so people kind of don't honestly go into stronger paths of investigation. They do kind of like just follow the same cycles of what they're used to. It's just like hard and fast logic. I don't want to be an atheist, nothing else. And they just kind of go down that hard and fast path without, you know, being comfortable with like actually observing everything. I have a tough time doing that, like committing to thinking of, you know, moving forward with life, bringing these spiritual tools in. It just comes with a lot of baggage, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does come with baggage when it comes from like a should place. I don't know if you're like me, but like if I start getting a list of like shoulds, then it's like, and I did this earlier on in my spiritual journey. Like I should be meditating every day. Like I thought that for years. I should be taking an ice bath at 5 a.m. I should be going on retreat. I should be doing this style of parenting, and I should, and you get so into the shoulds on the other side of religion because you're used to being a Mormon busy bee that it just kind of burns you out. And then you just like, don't want to do anything. And so to me, the difference between my approach is you don't have to do any of this because you should. You don't have to do anything. I'm a nihilist. Like the universe doesn't care. In a million years, nobody will care. We do it because you have this chance to be alive. And I want to improve the experience of that. I just want to have a better life. I want to play better. I want to experience better. There's this whole kind of spectrum of human experience, and there's a lot of suffering, and there's a lot of really great things to experience. And so it doesn't come from a place of should. It doesn't come from a place of I'm broken and I have to do this. It doesn't come from kind of those baggage places. It comes from I'm doing the best I can to improve the quality of my experience because mm-hmm. this is my chance to be alive. And some things I'm not going to be able to do. Like some things I've done this much to deconstruct Mormonism for my kids. Some of that reconstruction work, I'm not going to finish. And they're going to have to continue that. And I'm at peace with that, that to ask one generation, our generation, to both do full deconstruction and make a full system of reconstruction. It's too much for one brain to do in a lifetime. We continue that. Our kids continue that story for us in some ways. And that's okay. That's okay. That's totally human. That's totally part of the story. It's totally human nature. But as best I can, with the limitations and time and effort and energy and education and all the things that I can, I'm going to improve the nature of my life and experience and try to help the next generation have a better chance at a better life than the one that I was raised in. And my parents tried to do that for me, and their kids may, you know, try mm-hmm. to do that for them. And it's okay to be part of that story and not have to be perfect and not do all the shoulds. It really mm-hmm. is okay.
Yeah. Right on board with you, sister, there. That's one of the main things I wanted to get across in my Thrive speech as well, is like, look at all this cringe things that I've done on the internet publicly and in my personal life. And being able to then like look back and understand that you're going to be at different, what I would call like levels of consciousness. You're going to be from an abandonment place or a wounded place. You're going to be, you know, yeah. operating with only a certain amount of vision for like what you actually are able to handle. And so if you should on top of that, like you can't always be in the proper state of consciousness with all these different things in life being thrown at you in life. So I'm like,
And I don't even know if that's reasonable. Like something that helped me as a mother was realizing that if I was a perfect mother, it would actually do harm to my children. Because when my daughters, if they decide to become a mother and I never lost my shit and had to say mm-hmm. sorry, then what happens when they lose their shit and they don't have a model of what to do with that? And mm-hmm. so that gave me so much grace to be like, oh, actually being an imperfect mother and struggling with motherhood is actually a gift, because then I'm teaching my daughters tools for when they experience that too. And mm-hmm. so that just gave me so much grace that like, no, you don't have to be everything. There's no heaven that we're trying to attain. There's no, you know, none of that going on. We're just improving the quality of our experience and trying to cause less harm when we can. And that is great. And that is plenty. And you don't have to kind of kill yourself to be all of the things.
Mm-hmm. Well said. We were talking about last time and this time and all the times, I guess, just about like, how, when we come out of this nihilist phase and kind of coming to the realization of like, what do I actually want to experience? So I would love to talk to you more about like, from your book and your background, what do you think like people should look for of, you know, what they actually value? Like, where do they start? Where do they even begin to be like, I want to experience this without all of this tangled up of their conditioning, of what they should do, what they shouldn't do, what is just going to lead to too much chaos, all of these problems and things, and what kind of spiritual tools frameworks do you think people could utilize as they're trying to figure out, like, what do you actually want to then experience in life?
Yeah. So it depends on where the person is at in their ego development. So usually with Mormon men, they have a developed ego for various reasons. And, you know, because they were 12 or very special and all the things that you get to be as a Mormon boy. And so if you have that developed ego, you can start with your core values and your resonances because you have some sense of self already. And so you just start with like a list of core values and picking out three or four that are your core values. And then you can go into your resonances. What are the voices and podcasts that you like to listen to that resonate with you? What are the stories that resonate with you? What, you know, meaning and purpose story has, you know, really touched you, like really touched your soul, if we were going to use that word. And then we can start there and we can start building from there. The problem that I see a lot of Mormons, not just Mormon women, but any Mormon who never got to kind of fully experience building a personality and building an ego, is they never even got to do that. They don't even know who they are. They've never really felt like they resonated with one thing over another because they were forced into a box so early, whether it be because they had strict parents or they were gay or they were a woman, whatever it was. And so we can't start there. We can't start with your core values because you have no idea who you are. And so when we start from that place, we do a period of dating yourself. We do some Enneagram work. What's your Enneagram? What makes your brain tick? We do personality types. I tend to use Enneagram. Our friend Kyle Bishop tends to use Myers-Briggs and Big Five and some other personality typing. Yeah. That you mentioned in your Thrive Talk too. And essentially you do some self-investigation and dating yourself of who are you? And you try a bunch of different voices and you try a bunch of different experiences and you mm-hmm. find that you really like yoga or you find that you really like this voice over that voice. And with that process, it's really helpful to do inner child work because if you repressed kind of your inner child and your inner totally. Voice, then your resonances are really quiet because you've had to repress that. And so if you go back and do your inner child work where you imagine yourself when you're 5, 7, 9, 11, what did you need to say? What did you need to hear at that age? Becoming the parent that you needed to be, that you needed at that age, it can help heal a lot of those wounds and really bring up the resonances because you've healed some of the repressing that you've done so that voice is very quiet. So it depends on where you are. Sometimes we can just start with what are your core values and what speaks to you and where do you suffer less? Let's start there. For some people, let's dig into personality typing and inner child work and shadow work and really try to bring up a sense of self so that we can have that resonance compass to be able to take us to the next stage.
Yes. Is there any other kind of books or things that you'd want to plug? In addition to your amazing book, there is a link below in the description, No Nonsense Spirituality, that just came out. Links down below. Is there anything else in terms of like books or things that could help people investigate that more that you would recommend?
Yeah, I really do. It's one of my love languages, like giving love to others is to be able to like recommend the perfect book. So if you have something specific, ever like someone listening, you want to email me, like I really love the challenge of like finding the perfect book for someone. It's like, it's one of my expressive love languages. But for that, I really recommend there's a podcast that I really like called This Jungian Life. And it's three Jungian analysts. So Carl Jung, and it's really been one of my secret weapons for really understanding the self and the psyche and the aspects of the self and inner child and shadow and archetype and all these things. So I really recommend that podcast for self-exploration. I like Enneagram work if you're just starting with kind of personality type things. And any book on that, I don't really have one preference over another, but I really like that. And then there is a book that I like called for small creatures such as we, and it's written by Sasha Sagan, and it is The Science of Ritual. So she's the daughter of Carl Sagan, the scientist. So she's totally secular. Mm-hmm. And really dug into the science of rituals. She's also a mother, and how to kind of build this rhythm and pattern into your life in a way that's authentic to you, because the science just shows that it's really good for you and really healthy for you. And she was having to kind of do that because her father's a scientist. They grew up without religion. And her book is really the go-to for the science of rituals and where to start with that. So I recommend that one too. And there's also podcasts that she does on that one.
Love it. Dope. Thank you. In terms of inner child work, that was a big one for me as a youngest child who's also a performer. It is important to sometimes understand the ways that you did not get what you needed in childhood. And so mm-hmm. you're just a star. And then you're like, well, who am I when I'm not performing, you know? So I love everything that you just said and inner child work. There's a book called Inner Bonding that me and my husband have read. And just wanted to thank everybody again for being in the live chat. As we wrap up, I want to get a couple more questions in for Britt. Leaving super chats is a huge way to help not just this channel, but the 501c3 nonprofit that I now run and have to pay a lot of taxes on, but it's fine. I want to be doing this for a long time. So any donations you can make to the channel, links are down below. And also super chats are great if you want to get in some questions. So one other thing I wanted to hit on, and then if there's anywhere else that you wanted to go or read something from your book, you read some beautiful excerpts from your book on Mormon Stories. So anything that you want to pull out, you're welcome to. So my question goes like this. So I get you on all of the intellectual levels, on all of that stuff. And then when real life actually happens, I am the type of girl who in my darkest, most nihilist moments of my life, I have to search for some type of supernatural meaning. So I have gotten more supernatural as the years have gone by, since maybe 3 years ago when I started doing the work that I do. And so I will look for connections of things where, like, I was at my lowest point of there is no hope here, this is over. And that at that exact second, something that has never happened before happens. And it's like, if I was Mormon, I'd be like, that's a sign that God loves me. But now it's like, that's a sign to not kill myself. So I still hold on to those of like, there is something freaky deaky in this beehive universe where there are opposites reactions to each other when, and people have just shown up and helped me at times where I couldn't believe that I wasn't alone in the universe. So for people who are still kind of looking for seeking of signs and things like that, is there, when that's kind of all you have left, and it's, there's not any kind of harm to that, but it can kind of, I don't know, snowball into other things. What do you think about just making connections that there's absolutely something bigger at play here in the universe on this atheism to spiritual spectrum? Like, where do you land? What are your opinions?
It's a good question. And it came up a couple times in the chat of what to do with spiritual experiences after leaving and what to do with some things that happen that are mysterious and seem like too coincidental. And my answer to that is this phrase that I stole from Neil deGrasse Tyson when he's asked such questions, is to just say that's mysterious. And the thing about atheism is that some people think that as an atheist, I claim to know what ultimate reality is. And I know for sure that it's not supernatural, or I know that it's not this or that. And that there's no magic in atheism. And for me, the experience of atheism has been the opposite. By letting go of the specifically Mormon God, it actually opened my eyes up to the magic of reality. Now, Joseph Smith magic is insane. Like, it's crazy. It's literally insane. Joseph Smith magic occult stuff, when you really get into his magical worldview. But reality, like what we know about reality, is far more magical and far more mysterious than even Joseph Smith magic. And so for me, being an atheist isn't about, I'm sure that the world is materialistic. I'm sure that there's no this or that. It's not that at all. It's saying, I don't think that people 2000 years ago know more about this question than we do now. And that actually opens us up to what is possible. And so I have no idea I'm agnostic to what is going on with ultimate reality. It's mysterious. Sometimes it's counterintuitive. I sometimes will listen to like quantum mechanics, quantum entanglement stuff and blow my mind about all of that. There are experiences on mushrooms or peak experiences, or how did that person know how to show up at that time or call at that time, that my husband sometimes has visionary dreams, like things that seem to come true, dreams that are very vivid that seem to sometimes even come true. And so some people think as an atheist, I'm just turned off to all of that. And no, it's the opposite. By letting go of feeling like I know because of this one God, because of this one story from Mesopotamia, by letting that go, we can actually talk about what really is going on and how magical and how insane and how connected and theories on what is actually going on. So my experience as an atheist is that reality is magical, that things, I don't have explanations for things. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. I still want the tools. I want the tools and the benefits of religion and spirituality. And then when someone tells me an experience or has a dream or does mushrooms or does all these things that I don't know sometimes, how we are so interconnected that that happens. There's theories. I'm interested in the theories. I can play in those spaces. But because I faced my existential fears, I don't need anything to be true. I don't need there to be a God. I don't need there to be manifestation. I don't need there to be an answer. I can just say, that's mysterious. And we are far more connected than we even can comprehend right now, scientifically. We are that, I think we can say that we know. We are far more connected than we currently understand. Now, whether there's a materialistic explanation for that or a more supernatural explanation to that, I'm open to whatever reality is. We just don't know. The difference for me is like, I just don't need something to be true. And that makes it a more playful space and a more curious space. And I can just like, you know, play in all of these what is reality spaces instead of saying I know. So to me, there's far more magic and humility in being an atheist than being a believer.
Mm-hmm. You nailed it, girl. So things I just want to make sure people do not miss what Britt just said, because I am so on that wavelength, energetically, non-woo-woo speaking, that I didn't have a hard time facing down the reality of death. That's one that I was like, okay, you know, it was a lot of the other stuff. But yeah, once you kind of face down that is a part of life, and you don't have to have something be ultimately true, there is so much more play to just be curious and be open-minded. And I like coincidences, and I like things happening. I like being surprised. I like learning new things. And that is the space where you don't need to have a narrative about what this thing is. But I always try to at least make the narrative of, like, going back to the thing about shoulds, like, there's not really a should or shouldn't. I will learn along the way. Like, I am whole and complete as I am. I am loved. I'm like infinitely, there's no creator that loves me. It's just the energy that we share is based on like love and growth. And I'm part of something that is just continuing with evolution to keep moving forward. And I'm here to experience what I'm going to experience. And I'm going to soak in that love and give it back out. And like, based on that foundation, I'm just going to be curious, and I'm not going to have any kind of dogma that I'm bad, anyone else is bad. We're just, we're evolving, we're learning, we're growing, we're interconnected. And it's,
And if miracles and strange things are happening, like, it's not challenging to me as an atheist. Like, I'm more curious about that as an atheist. Like, tell me about that. Like, that's mysterious. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that at all. How fun. Yeah. How insane. Like, and we, you know, that's mysterious and we have fun with it, which is just a much more stable place for me than the 2 decades I spent as a truth seeker, because I was trying to figure out, if I know what's true, I'll know how to do my life. And that just like burned me out, because that was not the best way to build a life, because I never found that truth that I was looking for so long.
Yeah. And even my hardest, I think, like, you know, times and in and out of religion, I think I've really been blessed by playing in that curious space. So hope that what we just say resonates with people, because that's really where like the actual joy of like what I feel like the ex-Mormon journey, like, what did I deconstruct for? It's like, it's the curiosity, it's the joy, it's the learning, it's the open-mindedness, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to thank you for, let's see, a half BR. I can't read the whole thing. $20. Thank you so much. They said, I am sending two kids to BYU as we speak. I left this church 4 years ago. After 40 years active, all my family still active. Not easy. I've suffered a lot, but podcasts like this has helped me tremendously. Thank you so much. Thank you for your support. Doing what we can. Any other super chats or questions want to come in right now that I can ask Britt? And
I saw John DeLynn had one. He said, "Oh yeah, what was my favorite Beatles song." So I have to answer that one. John, if you're still listening, my favorite Beatles song is Blackbird. It's very, very soulful. It's got a very cool message. And my dad is a Beatles lover, and my dad is one of my heroes. And he raised us on the Beatles. And so I have some of the earlier Beatles songs I have more nostalgia with because they remind me of my dad. But Blackbird has always been my favorite song.
Do you, speaking of woo thing, do you like Across the Universe?
Yeah, I did. I haven't seen that in a long time, but yeah, I did. I remember liking it. I remember, was I Mormon at the time? Because there's a boobie that pops out in that. And I remember, like, I was watching it with other people. Yeah. And I remember, like, having feelings about it. Like, oh, I'm with other people. This is weird. I don't know where I was in my journey. But I remember that.
Like 2007, 2008, maybe.
That might have been, before my deconstruction. So I probably had feelings about that boob pop out that I probably... Mm-hmm. Now that I watch Game of Thrones, I'm not so sensitive to now.
What do you think? What do you know? Yeah. I edited that movie, all of the bad parts out of it, so that my mom would watch it because she's the biggest Beatles fan too. And I love that you mentioned your dad and think, the Beatles remind me of my mom. And I love how you've been talking about kind of reclaiming ideas about spirituality, of like what that even means. And when I lost Mormonism and I left the church, I didn't have a way to connect with my mom in ways that I did before. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, you're just like dead to them and you're like, well, I've already died. Let's live life, I guess. But it's really cute to have moments like that to connect with your parents. And the Beatles for my family is also one of them.
Yeah.
Do I have a favorite song? Gun to my head, have to choose.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Yesterday. Sorry, I got to be basic. Okay. Shit.
Sorry. It's a classic.
Can't help it. Blackbird, close up there though. All right. Do you need to rock and roll out of here? Or
I probably have time for one more question. Yeah, and then I got to go pick up kids.
Okay. For any other last questions you guys want to get in, or I'm going to race you to it. I'm going to finish it. I wanted to ask you about something that was from one of the chapters of your book. And as we're kind of talking about actually doing the things of developing the spiritual practice that is not full of nonsense, what is the science of awe? Mm. And like, how do you cultivate a sense of awe and contemplation? I think of, when we're talking about reintegration of things, gratitude is a big one for me, my lowest moments. I just know that in 30 years from now, I would love to have a time machine and travel back to when I was this healthy and had these time and talents. And I trade everything in, you know, a future version of myself to be here right now. And I pick up and I go forward and I'm excited to live in a place of gratitude or things that just cause me awe with nature or whatever. But what do you mean by the science of like, what is that all about? Awe, contemplation. How do we get there?
Yeah. So for awe, and we have a pretty big study that I reference in the book, I think, of our biggest studies, and we gathered it into kind of a meta-analysis of awe. And what happens with awe is it's any time that we are transcending our normal, neurotic, focused on small things that don't matter, self-obsessed, just of our brain, just our natural pattern where, you know, we're angry and everything's stupid and we're frustrated and comparing ourselves to others. And, you know, that just tends to be the default mode for how our brains work. And what happens with awe, it can be, it's always usually something very big or very profound or both. So a starry night, Beethoven's music, looking at the Grand Canyon, an incredible moment between two people. It's just something that kind of snaps you out of that brain pattern of thinking, I got to go pick up milk and da 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 da, and that negative bias that you have in your brain that's running you all the time. And actually getting out of that for a second and looking around, realizing how amazing it is to be alive, that this is amazing, this is incredible, that little things don't matter as much, that kind of thing. And so we've done studies where we take people to the Grand Canyon, move them through this guided meditation of awe, and watch how their behavior changes. And we know that compassion increases, gratitude increases, happiness increases, focus on things that matter, you know, will be increased throughout the day. And we can do studies like the person doing the test will drop their pencils, and how many people actually will stop and help to pick that up versus the control group who just were, you know, was doing the study while looking at a wall and not having this experience of awe. And we can compare them. And so we actually have science and even some evolutionary theories on why we developed the ability to feel awe, to look at the starry night together, and feel something. And it really kind of has some social benefits because we let grudges go and we let little things go, and mm-hmm. we can bond better, and we can get out of our neurotic brains and actually just experience for a moment. And so we have some science of how humans do that, and the effects of, you know, what our brain, what's going on in our brain when that happens, and the effects on our behavior. And the question then for you is, how do you experience that, and how do you increase that and have that be a regular rhythm in your life so that you spend less time in suffering neurotic brain and more time in life is amazing brain? Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, what people will call enlightenment, when you kind of shift your being so that you're in awe space, and that tends to be more of your default. That's what, you know, people will use the word enlightenment for, that kind of shift. So the question then for you is, have you ever felt that before, and how do you feel it? Because it may have been in a Mormon temple, it may not have been. For me, I never experienced that in a Mormon temple, but I did experience it at a Weezer concert, and I experienced it when people traveled to one location to see an eclipse, and people from all mm-hmm. over the world were just gathering to see something that nature does, and we're just going to stop for a second and appreciate it. That was an incredible, awe-filled experience for me. Ideas can sometimes, like, just big profound ideas can snap me out of that. Experiences with people, I mean, I just try to build it into my life, these kind of peak awe experiences. And I experience now more of them outside of religion than trying to do them in religion, because religion will say, here's the only way that you experience that. You experience that at the temple, you experience that in prayer, you experience that, you know, all these other ways. But they'll say, like, experiencing at a concert, that's like counterfeit happiness. That's not real, blah, 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 right? And so for me, those experiences have very much increased as an atheist. I have far more spiritual totally. Experiences as an atheist than I did as a Mormon or Christian or whatever religion I was in at the time. So there is a science behind it. The science shows that it's good for us, that there's a reason perhaps that we developed this ability. There's even some science that shows that there are some other primates that may experience awe, that there's monkeys that will sit on top of a mountain together and watch the sunset, and in similar way. And there's really no reason for them to do that mm-hmm. except for what it's doing for them as a tribe. So it may even be something that's bigger than just our primate species, but that's whatever it is, it's the good stuff of life, and it helps you to suffer less because you get out of suffering brain. So how do you feel that, and how can you build that into your life post-religion?
Mm-hmm. When's the last time you felt awe?
Excellent question. Let me think about that.
When you saw my lighting when we went live, you said Kara's lighting is better than mine.
Your lighting is better than mine. But life is meaningless, better than mine. So I'm gonna, anytime that I want to play like the meaningless card, it's a great card to play in life, because anytime that like something is like not great or not how you would want it to be, you can always just play the card that like, oh, everything's meaningless, who cares, and you just keep going. The last time I felt awe, I really feel this is maybe not going to be what people are expecting, but I have a group chat of some close girlfriends, And there's sometimes that we get so deep in our experience as a human and just the awe and the love that we have for each other and the safety that we have for each other, that it will actually just overwhelm me. Like I have to put the phone down. Like it's too much love. Like it's too much nakedness where I'm totally seen. I'm not lying about anything. I'm not hiding anything. I'm totally honest about what's going on with me as a human, and to be able to be received and met in that space, even loved in that space, is sometimes overwhelming. So to me, like you can say all the stuff, men in religion can say all they want about gossiping and girls are on their phones too much and they're talking too much and they don't need to go out so much together. It's just gossip. Like it absolutely sometimes like is a spiritual experience for me to spend time with my girlies.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Yeah. That is what it's all about. Again, when you're in groups that we kind of make ourselves outside of these systems, those are the ones that make me like you sharing that. That's the meta of it. It's like, I'm in awe that like, you know, we're doing it on the side of religion. We're doing the things with the groups. We're reintegrating. We're making these connections and all this happiness that is still just so forged in such a hot furnace that we get to enjoy now. I'm in awe that you have such a good place to feel awe.
It's for people who are deconstructing. And like you said before, like, what are we doing this for? Like, this sucks. This is so hard. It's because, you know, I'm in Boise, Idaho. So there are thousands of Mormons around me. There was a whole community of friends and family and extended family that I was in. And it doesn't compare to the two best friends that I have, and being that naked and that vulnerable and that honest, and not having to, you know, put on your happy face and do your Mormon thing. It's something that kind of intimacy that you don't get in religion because everybody's masking is the good stuff that's on the other side of deconstruction. It's the intentional life with deeper, probably fewer relationships than as a Mormon. You know, as a Mormon, you're Stake Relief Society president, you know, a billion people, but how many of those can you really actually be honest with and be held in that space? So I have fewer probably relationships now, but my life is so much more intentional and the relationships that I have so much more meaningful that it's the good stuff of life that's on the other side of the hard things that you're going through. So keep going.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, wise words. Thank you, Britt. I hope everyone pick up a copy of Britt Hartley's book. I have a link down below. The title again is No Nonsense Spirituality. Anything else that you want to add about the book or where people can follow you and find you? I have all your links down below, but...
Yeah, I'll be hanging out on TikTok. And then this summer, I'm going to be asking Nuanso to be my bestie and hold my hand while I start a YouTube channel. Because the thing that after my own self introspection on what I want to do with this space, the thing that I love to do is teaching. I was a history teacher before I got into this work, and I really love teaching. So I want to move a little bit instead of the content and coaching space. I want to move over to the teaching space because that is what makes me happy and life more meaningful for me. So she will be helping me. I'm putting her on the spot.
I got a new mic.
I got a fancy cool mic like all the cool guys. But I will be trying to get a YouTube channel together so that I can start doing some teaching, which is what I love to do.
I will be your first subscriber and your number one fan. All right. Britt, I will let you go. Thank you so much. And I'm gonna wrap up without you.
All right. See you guys.
I'm gonna rant. I need to go on.
And make them sandwiches because they don't care that I published a book. They just want a sandwich. So I gotta go.
All right. Tell my mom's a big everybody. Deal. All right. Bye. Well, thank you guys for hanging out with me and Britt. I just wanted to wrap up by letting you guys know that I am really excited about literally this type of awe is really the phase that I'm in right now that Britt was talking about. I love being able to not just like podcast and talk and do all these things, but like the real life connections. The like Thrive and Lost and Found Club that Chelsea Homer runs with a bunch of other people. These spaces are so exciting and I love being able to cultivate and make new things. And I need friends too. I'm a regular mom who just also sits in a room and talks in a microphone. So I want to be able to get off screens and get into the real life and make these connections and do really fun stuff. So one thing that I have coming up is a ex-Mormon, but really anybody, a group trip to Greece that I'm taking a bunch of people August 26th through September 1st. We're going to Athens and Santorini for 7 days. My husband will be there. It's through this really awesome travel company that I've been working with. We made an amazing itinerary. So going through like the ruins of Athens, taking the ferry out to Santorini to go stay at a beach resort. If enough people can come, I can rent a type of like catamaran or yacht for the 5th day and surprise everybody and sail around the Mediterranean for a while. So I've worked really hard on this trip, and it's pretty much for anybody. If you're single, married, if you're ex-Mormon, or any kind of like person who you just think you would vibe with a new crew, people who want to go take an adventure. I didn't know if I really wanted to do this trip because it's a lot of work to put into this and time to get away from babysitters and stuff. But I was convinced that I should do it because I've spent a lot of time through the last few years of my entire life. Just kidding. I'm 35 and I've never left the country. I've never done something big like this. And I want to be able to have different events and local meetups and stuff like that throughout the years. And I've already done a couple to launch my nonprofit and different meetups in Salt Lake and so forth and Thrive and trying to meet people around. But that will always happen as I continue to work in this space. And this will just be hopefully like once a year we can do something big and huge. So that sounds cool. Please look at the link down in my bio. It's in my link tree. It's down in the description of this video right now to go check out the itinerary. If you have any questions, you can email me. We can talk more. So I have a bunch of people signed up right now, and it's still $100 off until I fill a few more spaces. So that's all I got to say on my Greece trip. I'm really excited. I am leaving for the summer. I leave to go work at a summer camp with my girls. Speaking of things that resonate, speaking of finding your true self, so excited that I got this opportunity to go be an administrator at a summer camp back in Massachusetts. And I'll be gone for about 9 or 10 weeks from June to mid-August with my girls. Come back for 2 weeks, then we're going to Greece. And so I will kind of be MIA for that summer. I need to, like I said, back away from being in anybody to anyone in this kind of space and just be in the forest, be with my kids, do a completely different job for a while and kind of change roles. And then I can be able to jump back into it in the fall and hit the ground running once again. So thank you guys so much for your support for watching this video. And this entire channel is supported by my 501c3 nonprofit that I started, the Nuance Hug Foundation. So things are tax deductible in the United States if you want to go down to my donor box and keep this content coming. So this is my full-time job. Just going to keep working hard throughout the years. And hopefully wherever you find yourself, I will be able to offer something interesting and meaningful, useful, all of those things. Thank you guys for sticking with me throughout this entire process of Kara figuring out life and taking you on the road with me. Much love to Britt Hartley. Go pick up her book. I can't wait to read it. And if you want to connect more, my email is down below. And I, of course, have my Patreon, patreon.com/nuanceho, where I put everything up ad free. And if you guys have any other suggestions or things that you'd like to see, if Hotown's out there and they're like, Kara, summer's coming, what kind of content are we getting this summer? I'm up for suggestions. So I overall love you guys pretty much. Couldn't live without you. Super excited to be doing this. See you next time. Another episode of the Mormon History Hoedown.